With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now that you've found UBN Radio and discovered our quality talk shows, it's time to spread the word to friends, family, and the universe. 24 hours of music and talk. Radio without limits. That's why people keep coming back for more. That's UBNRadio.com.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
All right. Howdy, 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 and welcome to One-on-One with Jasper Cole. This is Mr. Jasper Cole, and we are coming to you live from Sunset Gower Studios right here in Hollywood, California. It's another Wednesday, and it means I have to give a shout-out to my producer extraordinaire, Mr. John Williams.
Hey, Jasper.
JW, if you're nasty. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm trying to survive this heat.
Oh, my God.
But I guess there's a thunderstorm going on right now.
Apparently, there's a big storm. But, you know, I was in Palm Springs up until yesterday, and Palm Springs, which typically should be hot, of course, had like 30% humidity, which for Palm Springs is really hot because usually it's like 7% or something. So we are spritzing up in here, although I think it was humid in L.A. today.
Yeah, it has been.
I can't take the humidity. Look at my hair.
It was over 100 degrees yesterday. It's just crazy.
I know.
But you know, it's like the closer we get to fall, the hotter the temperatures get. It doesn't make any sense.
I know, but we're such babies. We've had you know what I mean? Everyone freaks out with the heat. Yeah. I actually love heat if it's a dry heat. So, anyway, listen, speaking of heat,
yes.
Please go to, I'm not begging, but sort of, please follow us on Twitter at One-on-One J. Cole, Facebook, One-on-One with Jasper Cole, and you can go to my website, jaspercole.com, and we have an icon for the show, and when you click on there, you can find our advertisers. We're now up to 24 affiliate advertisers, our newest one being HiltonHotels.com. Maybe we can get Paris to come on, right? So let me just tell you who they are. Interserver.com, EUKhost.com, AdamandEveToys.com, SirLaTabla.com, QuestBars.com, Booking.com, Flair.com, CheapAir.com. There's a lot of .coms. You'll just assume there's .com after these. Advanced Auto Parts, Prime Slots, Bull Guard, Course Smart, Canvas World, 3-Day Blinds, Russell Stover Candies for all you non-diabetics, 21st Insurance, Fandango, Extended Stay America, SuzanneSummers.com, Bath and Beauty. We have to add Bath and Beauty because that's her specialty. Liberty Mutual Insurance, ZipRecruiter, Jewelry.com, Mindful.com, and as I said, our newest one, HiltonHotels.com. So welcome aboard, nice. Hilton, and to all of our sponsors and our advertisers, thank you. And what you do is go to my host page, and again, this is going to get shortened eventually, but it's www.ubnradio.com.
And go to shows, and then just click
go
on
to the shows.
One
go find One-on-One, and you'll see all of the advertisers. And when you find something you want to order or buy or book a reservation, when you click on there, our promo code is automatically embedded, and everyone gets credit for it.
Yep.
So, yay, there you have it. Well, listen, there has been a lot in the news since last Wednesday. I don't know where to start. I think we'll start with Praise Jesus and Kim Davis.
Oh, Lord.
Eye of the Tiger.
They were not happy about that. Let me tell you, I think
they just sued her today.
Yes, yes.
One, I think the band.
Rightfully so.
Who's the band?
Rightfully so.
Who's the band? I can't remember. Anyway,
is it Survivor?
Survivor.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
And I should know that. That's from my 80s.
Uh-huh.
But they are suing her, I think, for $1.2 million for she had no permission to use their song. So
yeah.
I just, no matter what happens, I just love the fact they're suing her, whether it goes anywhere or not. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's amazing that Mike Huckabee carried his rather large ass there and actually said that he would be willing, he'd like to be president for the next 8 years, but if that can't happen, he would gladly spend time in jail for 8 years to protect what he calls religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, It's amazing to me because I'm like, listen, the woman has a job to do. Did you also know, I found this out, sort of a family job? Either her mom or dad had the job for 30 years before her.
Yeah.
She's now had it 27 years. And, of course, one of her sons is the deputy clerk, which means he's following in mama's footsteps.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a family business.
And this is her fourth marriage, so I'm not sure which father is to this son. They look like the Clampets. And I'm from the South. I can say that. Did you see the husband was in overalls and a straw hat or something? Like a toothpick in his mouth, a dip of skull? I thought, Bubba, please.
Well, you know, they're comparing it to Wizard of Oz.
It's almost like that Rockwell,
famous
painting with the family and the pitchfork.
I think she's Dorothy. He's the Scarecrow.
She looks like Kathy Bates in Misery. I mean, you know, I'm sorry. I know we're all being shallow with her. But if you're going to put yourself out there like that, you know, clearly she doesn't have a gay friend. No, nobody would let her go out of the house looking like one of the Duggars. Something from Big Love.
Jasper, she's apostolic. They have to dress
that's even
that
worse.
Way.
When I heard apostolic, I was like, well, she's holy rolling in the damn aisles. You know, surprised snakes aren't coming down the aisle. And again, Southern Baptists from the South. I can say whatever the hell I want. But anyway,
Highbrow.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus, Kim Davis. But, you know, she's thinking she's the Rosa Parks now of this movement.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The bottom line is they let her out on Tuesday yesterday because she said that she, well, I don't know. The stipulation was she's not allowed to do any marriages but or gay marriages. But
she has to follow the law.
And do it. But she's still saying she's not going to do any.
She's defined. Yeah, exactly. But thankfully, there's someone on our side.
Right.
That is following the law.
Well,
for lack of a better word, and doing his job.
I mean, I don't want to give her any compromise, but if we had to compromise, why can't she just keep her job and not do gay marriages? There's a clerk in there now who's been doing the marriages.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will happen. So God bless you, Kim Davis, and hopefully you'll get a makeover. Now, my next story, which really pissed me off, is Caitlyn Jenner. Now, you know, JW, we talked last week. I'm a big fan of that show, I Am Kate.
Right.
I've been a big supporter of Caitlyn Jenner's. But she goes on the Ellen show yesterday and sort of announces that when Bruce was Bruce, and we know he's Republican, he was against gay marriage and, in fact, had a really hard time with it. Now, Caitlyn is saying that she hasn't quite come around with the issue either. And I was like, bitch, please, you know, you're sitting up here with a penis and breast and you're not even, you know, and you're asking people to accept you and to love you and you're going to be a spokesman for the trans community and you can't get on board with gay marriage. F you. I was really pissed. I just thought, and then Ellen went on Howard Stern and basically said how disappointed she was because how hypocritical that mm-hmm. Caitlyn would sit there and have the audacity to be out there saying, please accept me for who I am. I'm sitting here in a dress. I'm not even a full woman yet, according to having a surgery. And I know the trans community gets really upset about that, mm-hmm. but this is where I draw the line. It's like, okay, Caitlyn, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, don't try to be a spokesperson for the community. Mm-hmm. Learn your shit before
it
you
get it.
It
is LGBT for a reason. I mean,
it's
it is
supposed
inclusive.
To be all
exactly.
Yeah, I just thought, I'm done with her. Yeah. This was it. And it's too bad because the show is so great because it's not great because of Caitlyn. It's great because of all the other transgendered women that are on men. Mm-hmm. Well, men and women.
And
I'm sorry.
Bringing awareness to. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But the more I watch it and realize she really is completely privileged and disconnected from the issue.
Mm-hmm.
She still talks about you all and she doesn't say us and, you know, just stay up on your hilltop mansion in Malibu at this point.
I think
just
maybe
over
we
her.
Should shift the focus to Jazz because Jazz is an excellent representative
exactly.
for the trans community. And she has a television
on
show.
On TLC.
Yeah.
Everyone should be. Well,
Jazz.
Yeah, let's switch over. Let's start supporting I Am Jazz and say to hell with Caitlyn Jenner. I think this is her. Well, I'll be watching anyway this season finale because it's when she sits down with Chris. They teased it last week. I don't know if you saw it, but the very last 5 seconds is when Kris Jenner shows up. And this is so typical of a Kardashian, a Jenner. Well, a Kardashian. She first thing she looks at Caitlyn and says, I love your shoes.
Mm.
It's like, really? This is what we're going to keep it on that level? Mm-hmm. Who does your nails and I love your shoes? It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, let's go back to Jazz.
Yes.
I Am Jazz on TLC.
Tell everyone where they can find that.
I will. And yeah.
if you find it, since we're big fans.
We are. Actually, no. I have watched a few episodes of it.
No, I have too.
It is on TLC.
And Jazz is a teenager, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. She's about 14, 15, somewhere in there. It's a great, because it's really about, it's great to see a young person going mm-hmm. through this and her family supporting her and how she's dealing with school and just everyday life as a young trans woman at
right.
as a teenager. So check that out on TLC. And the other story, I guess, for me is Hillary Clinton having to grovel and apologize finally about these emails
yeah.
which I don't know how many times she has to, well, she, I guess saying, you know, she has, I guess she has to say, I'm sorry.
Right.
She can't say, she started early in the week saying, I apologize. And now she had to sit down with David Muir from ABC News and just say, I'm really sorry. I didn't understand. I mean, I didn't think it was a big deal or whatever. So I don't know. It scares me a little bit that her support, her ratings are down even more than they were. I know we're a long ways out to the election, but I just think it doesn't look good that she's slipping this far. I guess for Bernie Sanders fans, it's great because mm-hmm. Bernie is apparently soaring in the ratings, and some of the polls, he's actually beating Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, I can't remember, JW, are you a Bernie fan?
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an Elizabeth Warren fan.
I am too.
She was on The View yesterday. Oh, and the new beginning of The View, by the way, Joy Behar is fantastic. Welcome back.
I love Joy.
And Michelle yeah. Collins, yeah. who's been on many, has been on the Alec and Capernaum show.
Mm-hmm.
She's always fantastic. So big shout out to her. But yeah, so I love Elizabeth Warren. Of course, she won't say anything about whether she would, you know, jump on the ticket with Biden or jump in the race. But mm-hmm. I think she's fantastic.
I do too.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. The thing that scares me about Bernie is, I told you, visually, because he looks older, I don't know if the young people will vote for him, and mm-hmm. which is shallow and too bad, but it is a visual medium, you know.
There's little he said that I disagree with.
Yeah, a Sanders-Warren ticket would be...
It would be awesome.
Really awesome, mm-hmm. I think. And then I wanted to give a little plug, a movie I have coming out called Captured.
Okay.
A new trailer just got released today. If you go to Facebook, it's Captured the Movie, and everyone can check out the trailer. I play Shelley, the creepy groundskeeper.
Ah.
And we did this movie quite a while ago, so it's been... And we did reshoots and additional footage, so... It's great to finally get it, see that it's going to be coming out. So look forward
so
to that.
So it's CapturedTheMovie.com?
It's on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
The Facebook page. I don't think they have an actual website yet.
Okay.
If they do, I apologize. I don't know it.
I'm trying to find some of the pictures, and I'll put them in there.
Well, thank you. And I'm so excited about our guest today because with everything in the news about police corruption, police brutality, the rash of shootings, you know, sadly, it's such a hot topic right now. We have retired LAPD Sergeant Cheryl Dorsey, and she's also an author. She has a wonderful book called The Creation of a Manifesto, mm-hmm. Black and Blue, 20-year veteran of the LAPD. Cheryl's one of the few people that has left the force and is willing to actually speak on the corruption within the force as she sees it, including racism. And she's become quite the person, the go-to person on this issue.
Awesome.
So when we come back, we're going to be joined by Cheryl Dorsey, and we're going to get into all this. And also, JW, hopefully people can call in and ask questions.
Yes.
Give out the
great.
Number, if you don't mind. 323.
Yes, I'll give out the number when we get back from break.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think it's 323-284 or something, but we'll get that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'd love to people. I think this is the topic people want to talk about. And mm-hmm. I'm sure they have questions for Cheryl. So you are listening and watching One on One with Jasper Cole. And we will be right back. Bye bye.
The wound heals, but it never does. That's because you at war with love. You at war with love.
These battle scars don't look like they're fading. Don't look like they're.
Never let a wound ruin me, but I feel like ruin's wooing me. Arrow holes that never close from Cupid on a shooting spree. Feeling stupid cause I know it ain't no you and me. But when you're trying to beat the odds up and trying to keep your nods up, and you know that you should know and let it go. But the fear of the unknown hone another lover's phone sends you back into the zone. With no Tom Hanks to bring you home, a lover not a fighter on the front line with a poem.
trying to write yourself a rifle. Maybe sharpen up a song to fight the tanks and drones of you being alone.
I wish I never built, I wish I never touched. I wish that I could stop loving you so much. Cause I'm the only one that's trying to keep us together.
Yeah.
When all of the signs say that I should forget her. I wish you were the best I ever had.
Yeah.
I wish that the good outweighed the bad. Cause
yeah.
It'll never be over. Until you tell me it's over.
Until you tell me
these
it's over. You said it,
and I hope you never come back.
It shouldn't have happened, but you let it. Now you're down on the ground screaming medic. The only thing that comes is the post-traumatic stresses. Shields, body armors, and vests don't properly work. That's why you're in a locker full of hurt. The enemy within and all the fires from your friends. The best medicine's to probably just let her
I
win.
I wish I could feel, wish I could love. I wish that I could stop cause it hurts so much.
So much.
And I'm the only one that's trying to keep us together.
Yeah.
When all of the signs say that I should forget her.
Yeah.
I wish you were the best I ever had.
Hey.
I wish that the good outweighed the bad. Cause it'll never be over.
Can never be over.
Until you tell me it's over.
Until you tell me it's over. Does that's because you at war with love,
and I'm at the point of breaking, and it's impossible to shake it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, you hope the wound heals, but it never does. That's because you at war with love. Hope it heals, but it never does. That's because you at war with.
We're back, one-on-one with Jasper Cole.
All right, welcome back to one-on-one with Jasper Cole, and we're so honored to welcome today's featured guest, Miss Cheryl Dorsey. Welcome to the show. How are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Jasper, I'm great.
Thank
Thanks.
You so much for doing this.
Excited to be here.
Well, and please welcome also producer extraordinaire Dominic Friesen. Dominic always has great questions.
Come into the light,
Dominic. Come into the light. It's like Poltergeist. Come into the light. Well, first of all, congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
The Creation of a Manifesto, Black and Blue. It's amazing because as being an African-American female police officer, your perspective of is very unique, having been in the over 20 years, retired, right?
Yes.
So I think you started in 1980, but actually in 1978, you began your career. What position was that?
I was working for the Department of Justice. I was a stenographer.
Okay.
And that kind of piqued my interest in law enforcement. I had an opportunity to do a sting because, you know, PCP was very prevalent back at that time.
Right.
And they needed a black female to lure this drug
dealer. So you're an actress.
Dealer. Yeah.
Get
to,
Christy
yeah.
Love.
So they had me lure this drug dealer. And I thought, wow, this was fun. You guys get paid to do this. And
were you afraid at
I
all?
Went in.
I mean,
not
were you worried
all.
About
not
it?
Not at all.
So
no.
You already had my question was going to be, did you have an interest in law enforcement?
Not at all.
And that was a job and you got it. And then this opportunity kind of.
Yeah, I never wanted to be the police because understand, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, right?
I know. I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah. So
and you actually grew up there at a time when it was predominantly white. Is that correct?
Yeah. My parents, and I talk about this in my autobiography, my parents were the first blacks to move out on 94th Street. And my mom, as a little girl, used to always joke about, she called it a circus environment on the weekends because there were so many open house sales and they had the flags in the yard and, you know, people were coming through because they wanted nothing to do with this black family that had just moved in.
Oh, my God.
My mom and dad. Yeah.
Wow.
White flight.
Because I think a lot of people, I've been here 30 years. I don't think a lot of people realize that, you know. South Central has always just had this reputation of being African American. Yeah, so when I read that, I was really...
Yeah, and back then it was not referred to as South Central, right?
Right.
So when I grew up on 94th and Western, it was just Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Right.
So when did that change? I mean, it started in the 80s?
I'd say probably late 70s.
Late 70s?
Yeah, it started to change with the proliferation of gangs.
Gangs,
right?
That's what I was going to ask you about. Yeah. So I digress. Sorry, but I wanted, so when you got into, you did the sting operation, and from that you ended up going into to the police academy?
Yeah, what happened was I thought that I wanted to be post-certified, which is what you needed to be in order to be a peace officer.
Okay.
And so my mindset was to join the first police agency that I could, go there, do a year, get my post-certificate, and then lateral back to Department of Justice as a special agent. That was my mindset.
I see. Okay. Okay. So when, how was the police academy, first of all?
It was very difficult because I'm not a jock. Right?
Oh, right. And it's physically hard.
Yeah, it was very
physical. It's like boot camp for military.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because LAPD was quasi-military at the time, and they ran it like a boot camp. But when I came on in 1980, there was a consent decree to hire more women and minorities.
Okay.
And so what the department did is they created a physical fitness class that they would give 2 times a week for the pre-recruit candidates to come down and try to get in the best physical shape you could. And so I took advantage of that so that I could try to get. But, you know, it's just like in the military, I would assume that you're not going to be able to do the things that they task you with because their thing is to break you down.
Break you down.
Mentally
and
physically. Right. And then, you know, build you up, right? Make you better, stronger, whatever.
Well, did you, how many women were in your class? Do you remember?
I mean, yeah, I do. Our class was unique because, again, we had a consent decree.
It
was 50-50. We had 20 women.
Oh, wow.
20 guys.
Wow.
And that was the first class where they had so many females at one time. So we were very unique. We had officers who would come to the police academy just to see our academy class. I mean, we were like a science project, right?
Everyone dropping by.
Right. They wanted to look at us and wow. Yeah, it was crazy.
And did everyone graduate? I mean,
no, because there is an attrition.
That's what I figured.
And so I think out of the 40, we graduated 28.
Okay.
28 people graduated.
People dropped and dropped out.
For various reasons.
Right.
And what was the, I guess, the reaction within the department for example, for females being...
And did race play into it? Was that a different factor? You know?
Yeah, it did. Because understand, in 1980, they did not want anybody that looked like me on the police department. Really, they didn't. And they didn't want anybody that had a mind like mine, which was, I never bled blue.
You asked questions?
I never bled blue. You know, it was just a job. I didn't grow up wanting to be the police.
Right.
I just needed a good paying job with benefits.
Right.
And so that was my mindset. And so if you come on that job and you don't bleed blue and you don't need it like they need it, then they act like something's wrong with
you. Tell people what bleeding
you.
Blue means. I mean, I think I know, but yeah.
For me, it means that you buy into the system lock, stock, and barrel, that you believe everything they tell you, that you are mindless.
Mm.
For me, that's what it means. You're mindless.
Right. Drink the Kool-Aid.
Absolutely.
And that means overlook corruption, overlook anything that's happening.
Absolutely, because it's a very big deal, not only on the LAPD. This is not unique to LAPD law enforcement. Your partner wants to know that you, quote, back them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you're going to be down with whatever it is they're doing, good, bad, or
indifferent.
And they
sort of teach this?
They don't teach it
but
to you, but you know it.
You get it.
You get it. Yeah.
It's the unspoken rule.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
And they picked the wrong one with you, right?
Because well, you know what? I did what I had to do to survive, right? And
so
when I was a young recruit, I did what all young recruits do. I'm like a child. You're seen and not heard.
Right.
When I was a probationary officer in Southwest Division on Martin Luther King and Dinker, I was like a child. I was seen and not heard. I needed to get off probation. I needed to get vested.
Well, you were young also.
Yeah, I was 22 when I came on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just a bait. I mean, when you think about 22 now, you know. What happened? You've gone through many divisions. You worked your way up to sergeant, but along the way you had held many different positions. But did you know, so did you start noticing the alleged corruption in various forms from the beginning, or what was your first big run-in with it?
What
where
I
you
knew,
couldn't ignore it anymore, I guess.
Well, what I knew very early on in the police academy is I was introduced to, I'll just say, the isms.
Okay.
The sexism, the racism, right? The reverse racism.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that very early on.
Right.
And so for me, I had to play a mind game. I had to do whatever it was to get me through that moment. So for PT, we had 2 hours a day, and it was very intense. And so I just figured for 2 hours a day, they're going to torture me. I just need to do what I can do to get through that. When I graduated and went to the police station on King and Dinker, I knew that I had 12 months to get off probation.
Okay.
And so whatever they're going to throw at me, you know, and I had heard that, you know, partners like to play games with you. They would drive and pull over real quick and ask you, where are you? You know, and you got to know what street you're on, you know, or they would get in a fight. You know, we used to fight a lot. I was like, okay, I'm from the hood. Let's do this. Right?
Throw down.
Yeah. And so they would get in fights. Not that they're going to let you get hurt. Mm-hmm. You don't know that.
They're testing you.
They want to see if you're going to fight. They want to see if you're going to back your partner, because backing your partner is everything.
Over everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
Do they put two females together, or is it mostly male females?
No, they will. They will. But back then, there weren't many women.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So just luck of the draw. You know, I would get my partners, my training officers were males.
Right.
Luck of the draw, my training officers were white males.
Okay.
There were some black males that worked in the division that I went to as a probationary officer, but I didn't get lucky enough, if you will, to work with one.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason, they never partnered me with them. But you know what? I'll say this about the white officers that I did work with. They were what you would call hard chargers. You know, they were, can I curse?
Oh, hell yeah.
They were kick ass and take names,
yeah,
back in the day,
right?
And I worked in the jungle, right? So
right.
For those who understand what that area is like, in 1980, 81, 82, we had a problem with FOI because Fruit of Islam soldiers lived in the jungle.
Wow.
And we were having skirmishes with them all the time. And mm-hmm. so I felt like it was a constant test and a challenge for me to see how I'm going to handle this situation, how I'm going to handle that situation. Your partner would hear a hotshot radio call,
mm-hmm.
a high priority radio call, and it may not be in your area, but they would buy it. In other words, they would tell the communications, we'll handle.
They'd sort of take over.
Because they want to see what I'm going to do when we get there. If it's a PCP suspect and it's not in our area, my partners would buy it to see what am I going to do when I get there. And there's a naked man, slippery and greasy like a pig, and he just wants to fight.
Just fight.
What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, today they just shoot him.
Yeah, today they shoot him. Absolutely.
So, and that brings me to the point I was going to ask you. Even back looking in the early 80s compared to now, what do you believe has attributed to this? Mm-hmm. It seems like a culture of brutality amongst cops.
It's a climate,
like
yeah.
this need to just shoot without, you know what I mean? Was it always, maybe we just didn't have 24-hour news and we didn't hear about it.
Yeah, we didn't have obviously the advent of the cell phone,
right?
So you don't have people recording, right? That wasn't until
Rodney
King. But truthfully, you know, this has always gone on. This is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then somebody would just get their ass handed to them, and, you know, they call it beat and release, right? You just you say something wrong. Back then, we could just choke you out. If I come on a radio call and you say something crazy to me and I don't like it, I'm putting you in a shoulder spin, spinning you around, choking you out, sitting you down. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And then we leave.
And
I don't even have to arrest you. You know, I just leave.
And then everyone backs everyone up on
absolutely
what happened.
Absolutely.
That reminds me a lot of the movie Rampart, speaking of which we worked on. And I mean, I lived here during that scandal, and I think that was the beginning of the climate. I remember we were all scared of the cops, and after that scandal broke, that was over 100 officers, I believe, that were indicted.
Were indicted.
But that scandal.
That's just 100, right, that
right,
they
right.
got.
That
I
they
mean,
got.
How many probably slipped through. Or
And then I think the difference between now and then is that officers, you know, and if that's a good thing, that they could just beat you up and leave you. But
choke
but
you out is
but
what
you
I
lived,
like.
Right?
Right?
You lived.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, now it's gotten to the point where force, deadly force, mm-hmm. has always been taught as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing it as a
first resort.
Yeah. Officers don't like what you say. They don't like the way you look at them. They don't like what they deem as disrespect. They just shoot you and kill you.
Right.
And then it's only one version, unless you happen to have somebody standing on the side with
now
a cell phone,
yeah.
right, who can
yeah.
videotape
Thank
that.
God for
and
that.
Then we can see the real.
Right.
Right.
But
in
know,
the past, it's always been the officer's account and great deference is given to what police officers say, so no one challenges
right.
them.
Like even in Ferguson, you know, when they actually do the investigations mm-hmm. and even when the DA gets involved, I never trust that that's even happening. I have a real suspicious of the legal system in general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more suspicious of the legal system than the police force, to be honest. But I just always figure that's just another bullshit like investigation that's not going to, like in Ferguson, they let the guy off without charges.
Well, you know, there were so many things wrong with that Ferguson situation because we understand that the district attorney, Bob McCullough, right?
Right.
Well, we know that his dad was killed by an African-American mm-hmm. individual. He obviously seems to have some kind of bias towards blacks,
right.
not in a good way, because he stacked that jury with what we know now to be racist individuals, right? And so everything was set up for that system to work the way that it worked. And then when you have police departments who are in bed with prosecuting attorneys, you know, I deal with attorneys every day. I see you all the time. You're my guy, right? So when I come in with any kind of report, you're not going to question me because you know me and I know you.
And you're telling me earlier in the green room, in regards to the Sandra Bland case, that it was probably the officers, the arresting officers, and their relationship with the jailers. Can you?
What I said is officers have a symbiotic relationship with the jailers because as a police officer, I'm making arrests 3-4 times a week. That means I'm in the jail 3-4 times a week, booking a body. You're the jailer. I know you. You know me. I'm your girl.
It's like any job, you get to know the people.
So when I come in with an arrestee who's giving me a hard time and I tag you and now she's yours, if she's offended me, she's offended you. Right? And so I believe that those jailers just finished what that officer started in the field. And so when you look at all of the relationships, to me, they're all symbiotic. And I don't know if you know this. I read this, so I believe it to be true, is that the person who did the autopsy on Sandra Bland, the medical examiner. Is the wife of the prosecutor.
You know what?
Who knew?
It's just ridiculous.
Who knew?
Well, what kind of backlash did you get initially for, you know, speaking out, I guess? And when you, you had your own you went through your own situation with the LAPD. You want to speak on that? What happened in terms of, it called?
Border Rights.
Border Rights process. B-O-R.
So what happened was, so let me say this real quick. So I wrote my book because of Christopher Dorner.
Right.
I wanted people to understand how he got there. I don't condone what he did. I don't agree with what he did. But I know how the LAPD will grind you down and wear you down. I had been to a Board of Rights. And what it is, it's a kangaroo court. They have no rules and no regulations, and they change the rules and regulations from moment to moment. They decide what's relevant. They decide what can be heard. They decide who can be heard. And so if you get sent to a Board of Rights, the understanding is that the police chief is not happy with you.
Right.
And he wants you dealt with in a real way. You only get sent to a Board of Rights if termination is a possibility. I was sent to a Board of Rights with, at that time, I had 18 years on the department. When I came on the department, I came on with the knowledge that if I lose my job before I hit 20 years, that golden mark, I don't get a retirement. I just get to go. All the money that I've paid into my pension, I lose. And so it's almost like the police department has a real incentive
to get you,
if they can, before you hit 20 years, right? For the old timers, for people who came under the pension plan that I came under. So in 18 years on the job, the department sent me to a Board of Rights because I was married to a police officer who was abusive. And I had children with this man. So I would not tell all of what was going on because I'm still living with him. And I've got children by him. And even when I made up my mind to separate myself from that situation, I still had to do it in a way that made sense for me and my children.
Protect them.
And so they sent me to a Board of Rights when they became aware of the domestic violence in my home. What the department did was they went after my husband for the abuse. They sent him to a Board of Rights. They had a black advocate who is a sergeant in internal affairs act as the prosecutor against my husband. 2 weeks later, this same advocate is now prosecuting me. During my husband's Board of Rights, he portrayed me as a victim. During my Board of Rights, he said I'm a liar. He said that I can't be trusted. He said that not a mother in the cosmos would stay in a relationship like the one that I had described being in. And he thought that because I was a sergeant married to a police officer, I should be able to go home and give him direct orders and make him behave. So the department was trying to fire me. And with 18 years on the job, all I could think of is if they fire me, I lose everything. At this point, I'm a high school grad only. I've got 18 years as a police officer. I've done nothing else in my young life, right?
Which should be a good thing.
I'm a mother of four now. I'm in the process of a divorce. And I'm thinking, if I lose this job, I lose everything. And for a moment, as I stood outside and waited for them to come back with their decision, I thought about jumping off the third rail of the Bradbury building in downtown Los Angeles, because my mindset was, if I kill myself, my children will at least get my
insurance money.
They'll at least be taken care of. And so I understand how that department can make you think about doing things that are out of your character, that's not you, right? I'm not a suicidal person, but I thought, if I lose my job, what the heck, right?
Right. So with Christopher Dorn, is like, that's your point. I mean, we didn't even know. So if it takes someone who doesn't have mental issues like you did not have, take someone who has some sort of mental issue and then push it that far.
And you
we
know
don't
what?
Know that he did.
I will say this, and I don't know him, but I don't believe he was mental.
Right.
I believe he was pushed. And I believe that the department had taken everything from him, like the department will do to you, mm-hmm. because they want you to continue to feed at the trough. And if they feel like you think you can survive without them, they will tap you on the shoulder and they will explain to you how that can't happen. And one of the things I talk about in my book is I talk about a gentleman by the name of Fred Nichols, because I say Fred Nichols was Christopher Dorner before Christopher Dorner.
Before.
He was a black man, a sergeant of police, an expert department spokesperson on use of force. Fred Nichols testified at the Rodney King trial that the force the officers used was excessive, right. because he was under oath and he told the truth. And when he did that, the department came after him. And what I talk about in my book is Fred Nichols bled blue. So when the department came after him, he couldn't believe. He's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing my job. I'm telling the truth. I'm being honest. You know, come on. I'm one of you. What's up? And he talks about how he couldn't eat, how he couldn't sleep, how he was vomiting, and how he was so bothered by the way the department turned on him. Mm-hmm. And so what I say in my book is that Fred Nichols didn't create a manifesto.
Right.
He didn't go out and hurt anybody. Fred Nichols checked himself into a hotel. He put a shotgun to his head and he blew it off.
And did
that's what LAPD
did the press cover that?
Yeah, they covered
little,
it.
Yeah.
They covered it. But, you
covered
know, it was minimized.
Right.
It was, you know, it was, it, you know, because they're good at victim blaming.
That's
right.
What I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So they want to say you're crazy. They want right. to say you were unfit all along. You should have never been. No, the department will wind you down, grind you down. They have the resources, the financial wherewithal. They beat you up.
And so but you were victorious and saved.
Thank God.
So when they came back in with that verdict that day, were you floored? Were you surprised?
I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But the thing that saved me, and I talk again about this in my book, is I had a commander who was the only person that was willing to come and testify to my character.
Mm.
I asked him to come and be a character whip because that might mitigate the penalty.
Right.
This was a white man. I couldn't get a black police officer to come and say
come
anything on my behalf.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I asked a black commander and he told me, forget you know me.
Wow.
I asked this white man if he would come and be a character with, and he just wanted to know what time you need me there.
See.
But because of who he was on the department, and his name is James Tatro, rest in peace, he's no longer here with us. He testified and he told that deputy chief on my board of rights that you have reached too far into the Dorsey bedroom. What are you doing?
Wow.
And because of him and him alone, I stand witness that they would have fired me but for Commander James Tatro.
Wow.
And so what happened at the very end is they listened to him speak. They came back and the commander looked at me and he said to me, and I'll never forget, he said, on this one day for this one instance, I see a need for mercy. And I'm going to suspend you for 5 days without pay, Sergeant. You were the victim of domestic violence, but I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to suspend you for 5 days without pay. And that's what they did. And I just said, thank you, Jesus. I just need to hold on white knuckle for 18 months, and then I'm good
out
with LAPD.
And so how were those next 18 months? Was it pretty calm? No one bothered you? Or
no,
did you
not,
have...
No, it was, nothing's calm on
LAPD.
I
didn't know if it escalated. Or.
Well, you know what happened is it was okay for a minute, and then I had a commanding officer who was sexually harassing me, but I was very near the end, and, you know, God is good. I was driving down the street one day in my patrol car, and a gentleman rear-ended me in my patrol
You'll
car.
You'll choke him out.
And so when he rear-ended me in my patrol car and the paramedics came out to interview him and deal with his medical condition, and, you know, I was rear-ended, so, of course, I had some situations that I needed medical attention for. And so I told the fireman, I said, you know, my back is hurting, my neck is hurting. This guy just slammed into the back of my car, and he said to me, don't move. He said, we're going to give you the same treatment we give every citizen of the city of Los Angeles. And he laid me out on that board, and he tied me up like a Christmas turkey. And then the doctor put me off work for about
like
4 months because of the injuries that I sustained
right.
in that rear-end collision.
Right. Bless
and
you.
That took me right up to day.
We'll see.
The last day of my career.
Thank
yeah.
God for the rear-ending, right?
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
So when you left, did you start speaking out
No.
You waited. It was you just waited, right?
I didn't say anything because I didn't have anything to say. And, you know, what I did initially was I started looking for other jobs because right. I was still fairly
very young.
Young,
yes.
And so I thought, well, I'll go have another career because that was my mindset when I realized that I didn't bleed blue and I was only going to do 20 years and then I wanted to go have another life. And so I started interviewing for other positions. And what I found out was that I couldn't get a job anywhere. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I was a sergeant of police on the Los Angeles Police Department, 20 years, honorably retired. And I tried to get a job with CDC, Department of Corrections, right. working in the jail. I figured clearly I'm qualified to say, you know, open tier three, close tier three. Right. I could not get hired. And I didn't realize at the time that I couldn't get hired because I had sued the city of Los Angeles for that sexual harassment that happened in that last year of my tenure on the department. And so I can't prove that, but I just find it telling that I couldn't get a job.
Yeah,
right?
That tells
and
you
so that's what LAPD does to you. Yeah, that's what they probably did to Christopher Dorner. And so I believe that on that Friday before he went into that killing spree, the military had released him.
Right.
Now, I don't know why the military released him, but I'm just guessing that on that day when they released him and he figured, I've got nothing else.
Nothing.
I've got
rock
nothing
bottom.
To live for. Yeah. Why am I here? Right. But I'm going to hurt some people on the way out, which, again, I don't condone.
No, but
I know how he got there.
Yeah, right. And no one, the LAPD doesn't take any responsibility.
No. Of course, they say he's crazy. He was ill-fit. Right. He should have never been a police officer. But see, here's what people don't understand about the Los Angeles Police Department and probably any other police department. If you work for Sparklets and they fire you and you go get a job at Home Depot, Sparklets like, have at it. Good for you. If you work for LAPD and you get fired.
Yeah.
If you work for LAPD and you get asked to go, you don't get
job
anywhere else.
You know, when you were talking about, it's sort of like corporate America does that now with wanting people to getting people to retire before, as they get close. It's happened to my dad, too, but it's just systemic. But you think in the police force, it's such an honorable position that that wouldn't be the case. But there you could actually work 30 years, right? I mean, there are people that work much longer.
Absolutely. I mean, I have contemporaries who are still there,
right?
I know people that are just now starting to retire. Had I stayed on the department, I would have 35 years.
Right.
But statistics show the longer you stay because of the stress of the job, the less longer you are to live on the other side. And so for me, it was more important that I have longevity when I get out of there, right? And so I've been retired honorably now for 15 years, right? So...
Well, so back to this rash of brutality that we're seeing in Baltimore and New York and Houston and all the cases we talked about. What do you – I mean, we talked a little bit about there's cell phones now or whatever, but this whole attitude of it's, it used to be shooting was the last resort, now it's the first. Why isn't someone – changing that in the training, or what do you think the reason for that is?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, in my opinion, because a lot of this is driven by male police officers. So I think really what happens is I think because of the testosterone thing that goes on with you guys, right? It's like two rams, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like a test of wills,
the king.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of what we're seeing has very little to do with overcoming resistance. It has very little to do with controlling a combative suspect, and it has everything to do with punishment.
Right.
I think officers get personally involved. When I tell you to get out of the street like Darren Wilson did Mike Brown, and I'm sure he was insolent and took his time swaggering out of the street, much like Sandra Bland did when the officer asked her, are you okay? And she's like, hell no, I'm not okay. You just wrote me a ticket. No, I'm not good. Get out the car
get
now.
Out of the car.
Much like Ray Tensing did with Sam DeBose when Sam said, oh, you know, this is getting crazy.
Right.
I think I'm going to just drive off. And he shoots him, right?
Right?
It's punishment.
He claims he was being run over.
Yeah,
so.
It's punishment. Right. Much like Michael Schlager did with Walter Scott when he took off running and Michael Schlager didn't have enough juice in his engine to catch him, right?
Right.
And so you
instead
shoot somebody.
I'm
in the back.
I'm tired, so I'll just shoot you.
Yeah, you just shoot him. And so understand that when all of these things have occurred, what I say all the time, and I haven't been proven wrong, they don't let me down, is this is not the first time this officer did that.
Right.
There's always
a pattern,
history.
But it's been covered up.
Right, right. And so when we look at Walter Scott incident, Michael Schlager, Walter Scott was the third person that we know of that he tased, right?
Wow.
He had tased two other gentlemen before that. We know that Darren Wilson had been fired by Jennings Police Department before he was hired by Ferguson Police Department because he was ill-suited. We know that Tim Lohman had been asked to leave Independence Police Department before Cleveland PD picked him up because they said he scares even us, right? And so they live to offend again. And there's no accountability.
And no one's checking their history when they get hired, or it doesn't matter.
Covering it up,
or they do, and you know, it's all good, because what I believe is, I believe that police chiefs and commissioners and sheriffs have an obligation to that entity. Mm-hmm. And so they protect that department.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if in so doing the officer benefits, okay, good. It really wasn't about you, Officer
right.
Lohman.
Right.
It was really about the police department, because we understand when you do bad things, we're going to have to pay money.
Right.
But if we admit that we did something wrong, we would pay a whole lot more than what we're ultimately settling for. And mm-hmm. so we understand right now with Freddie Gray, they offered that family 6.4. Mm-hmm. You know, who's surprised by that?
Please.
Who's surprised by that? We know that in time they're going to offer money to the Sandra Bland family. Mm-hmm. We know that in time, New York PD will offer money to the family of Akai Gurley, a young man who was shot in the stairwell, much like they offered to Eric Garner's family.
That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
So this is just the cost of doing business. Killing folks and having to pay is just the cost of doing business.
But ultimately, it's the taxpayers, right, who pay for it.
Absolutely. And so wouldn't it be amazing if they started making police officers who are involved in these deadly force incidents, these in-custody deaths, just pay a little bit of that.
Yeah.
If you just had to pay 1 point something of a 6.4, that would break the back of an average police officer. And this stuff would stop yesterday.
Well, and you wonder how many settlements happen that we don't know about.
Well,
I don't know in terms of the 20 years you were there that maybe didn't make the news.
You know, when it's outrageous like Eric Garner and things like that, we hear about it. But generally, they have something built in where when the city settles with you, you sign a stipulation that you won't discuss it.
Confidentiality.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cheryl, are there any mental health assessments that go on while you're in training or while you are in the force?
Only when you first come on. And that's another thing that I think should happen, is that police officers are given a psychological evaluation upon entry, and mm-hmm. you have to pass it to become a police officer. But once you're in, you're good, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, really, police officers should be reevaluated, mm-hmm. I say, every 3 years.
I agree.
Right? Because I believe that police officers are exposed to things that could twist you, mm-hmm. that could jade mm-hmm. you, that could mm-hmm. cause you to have biases,
right.
whether it's stuff you see or whether it's stuff you're taught by your trainer, because as a rookie officer, we want to be pleasing to our trainer.
Right.
He holds my life in his hand. If I want to get off probation, I'm going to do everything he say,
right?
I'm going to do everything he shows me, because police officer trainers tell you, forget what you learned in the academy. Let me show you how it's done out here in the street
for
real.
Like learning one thing in the classroom and then on the job is another thing. Do you think having more female cops helps? I always have this theory, like if more women ran the world, it wouldn't be as corrupt.
Well, I think,
or as violent. You were talking about the testosterone.
Right. I think certainly women bring a different element mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. the game, right? Because as a female mm-hmm. officer, I understand if I walk into a family dispute and I see you looking like you looking, I can't beat you up, right?
Well, you could actually.
So I'm not going to come in the room telling you I'm going to tear your head off and shit down your throat, right? I'm going to have to use something else to get you to comply. Now, if mm-hmm. I have to use charm, if I have to bat my eyes, if I have to have you think I'm cute,
right?
Then I do all that.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I just want you to come with me.
Right?
Do
they talk about that in police? See, I think that's my point.
That's common sense.
Right?
And if mm-hmm. sense were common, everybody would have it.
Right?
And you can't teach it.
No.
Right? And you can't teach empathy. Because as a mother, mm-hmm. when I deal with someone, you could be my brother.
Right.
You could be my son. So I'm going to treat mm-hmm. you the way I want a police officer to treat any one of my sons if you encounter them.
Right?
That's just me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you can't teach that. You can't read that in a book. And so if I don't look at you and see you as a human being,
then it's
easy for me to objectify you. It's easy for me to knock you in the head with a flashlight.
Right.
Put a Newton turban on you. That's what we used to call it when I worked Newton Division.
What is that?
When you beat somebody up and then you wind up wrapping gauze around their head because you cracked them in the head with a flashlight.
Oh God,
so they wind up with a Newton turban. Yeah,
speaking of which, what are some of your tips for how the listeners can actually
protect themselves
and keep themselves alive?
So here's what you need to do. First of all, you need to comply. You need to just do what the officer says. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need to be a good witness. You need to look at his name. You don't have to ask him. You don't have to telegraph that you might complain. Look at his name. He's wearing it. Get the number off his car. And just very nicely ask him, could you please call a supervisor because I'm not feeling comfortable mm-hmm. here. Officers are required to do that. Mm-hmm. No guarantee that he will,
right.
but they're required to do that. And then the other thing that I suggest is know a couple of 2-3 police station telephone numbers. Have it pre-dialed into your phone. So if the officer is not cooperating with you in getting a supervisor, you can get on the phone and dial and ask to speak to the watch commander.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And question for you. We actually had a guest, Tony Terry, the R&B artist. He was pulled over about 2 months ago, three o'clock in the morning. They said he had dead tags, which he knew was not right. So he actually called 911. He had 911 on the line. He told the officer and the whole.
Here's an African American man in probably a very nice car. I'm assuming mm-hmm. you know the whole yeah. stereotypical.
911 is good, but when you call 911, you're going to get a dispatcher. You're going to get a civilian. Right. You need to have the telephone number to the police station.
Okay.
And yeah. you need to ask for the watch commander because that's going to be a sergeant or a lieutenant.
Right.
You need a person in position of authority.
Right. Well, that's what I've said I've watched these videos. I mean, it's easy for me to say I'm not in, but I always thought, well, just do what they're asking.
Absolutely.
Go
back to like the Sandra Bland case. Mm-hmm. What did she do wrong in the video that we saw?
She talked too much.
Yeah. Okay.
She did herself no favors.
What about the whole cigarette situation?
Yeah. But here's the thing. You never know who you're dealing with. Okay. That's the problem. You don't know what you just pulled out of that cop grab bag.
Right.
So mm-hmm. when you should be able to discern very quickly, you got a wild one. And when you realize you got a fool, then you need to just shut up.
Right.
When he said, okay, put the cigarette out and get
out,
she should have just, no more. I'm done talking to you. Let him do whatever he's going to do because he's going to do it.
Right.
And you can't win.
Right.
Right?
That's
and
a good
so,
point. You can't
you
win.
You cannot win.
That's the best point
cannot
of all.
Cannot win.
Yeah.
So,
that's
yeah, just
point.
Be quiet. Be a good wit. Be
Comply.
A good advocate. Comply.
And that video.
And write a letter of complaint.
Okay.
Write a letter of complaint and send it to the police chief, the police commissioner, the mayor, the governor,
news crew.
And CC everybody so everybody knows who all got a copy of that letter because somebody's going to act on it.
Right. Okay. Oh my God, the time flies.
We need to have 3 hours.
So tell everyone where they can find the book. Is it on your website?
Amazon.
You can find my book on Amazon. It's The Creation of Manifesto Black and Blue. You can certainly find it on my website, CherylDorsey.net. I'm on Facebook and I'm also on Twitter, SGT Cheryl Dorsey.
Well, it is a great honor to have you here.
So glad to be here.
God, I wish all
go on and on.
I wish all police officers were like her, right? Thank you so much. Come back anytime. Thank you, Dominic. JW, thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And we will be back next week with another great show. You've been listening and watching One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Take care.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.